I want to be Trey Songz out here. Did you listen to his mixtape? Of course
who?
You didn't.
Who?
I know. As soon as I asked that, I was like, why? You ever like say something in your brain like, talking to you?
First of all, unless your name is Drake, R&B dudes, and he's not really an R&B dude, shouldn't be dropping mixtapes.
What about a Gangsta Grillz?
See, what was a good R&B Gangsta Grillz?
How many R&B Gangsta Grillz were there?
Should there have been any? I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear drops, sound effects on synth. Yo,
do you remember a mixtape DJ named DJ L?
Maybe.
Okay, so he used to do R&B mixtapes, and instead of yelling on them, he would whisper.
So it's like a new R. Kelly's like, new R. Kelly.
That's exactly what he would do.
You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, you should follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle at CRS Podcast. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by the good folks at Tumblr. We are on SoundCloud. We are on iTunes. You can subscribe to us there. You can rate us. You can comment. We're on Facebook, Facebook.com/ClockRadioSpeakers. And we are also powered by the good folks at 4thDistrict.com. And of course, there is no... See, I wanted to say something really like funny and interesting. One of these days, I'm going to get the intro all the way right. I'm just not. But hey, Doc's here.
Another stellar introduction from Armand. No, I'm just playing.
One day, I'm going to like Arsenio Hall you one day, and I'm just going, it's one day.
One day. What's going on, everybody? This is Doc. You can follow me on Twitter at Doc_Beats, S, not a Z. I think you got everything. We are not on Black Planet. We are not on Instagram. We are not on Christian Mingle.
Nope.
We are not in Tinder.
We should have been on Grantland, RIP Grantland.
I still out of habit. Like when I'm like, I want to check something out. Like I will still type the GR and then Chrome will autocomplete. I hit and I'm like, wait a minute, where am I right now?
So are they like, at least is the site still up? It's just not being updated, or did they just take everything down?
So if you go to it, they basically have a big image that says it was a good run. To access the archives, click above. And then the archives are all there. You got to search for them. But yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of sad because, like, you know, I still follow some of the writers on Twitter. So, like, I went to read a Zach Lowe article today, and I get to, you know, it's just the regular, like, I click the link in his Twitter, and it's just the crappy ESPN.com. I'm like, oh God, can I? Because I really don't ever go to ESPN.com.
No.
So, aside from Deadspin, I need to know, if you're listening, please let me know what is a good place to go and read about sports where I won't want to, like, you know, tear my eyeballs out. So please, please hit me up and let me know.
Are people going to say Bleacher Report?
Got anything else? I mean, if it has to be Bleacher Report, it's better than ESPN.
Yeah, that's true. So what's going on, man? What's the word?
You know, it's been gray. Like today, it's raining now. It's just sort of like not a whole lot of energy. So typically when we record at night, I'm drinking some herbal tea, but I've swapped in. I'm drinking, this is, you know, really hardcore stuff. I'm drinking some actual caffeinated tea. So we'll see if my energy level can stay up throughout the episode. But no, it's good, man. Had a good holiday.
Good.
Was off from work for 3 days. So that was nice. I got just far enough away from work that when I came back on Monday, I was like, who am I? What do I do? What's going on? But not deep enough into the vacation where I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this to be over. Because I'm that kind of person. Like last year, my company's very, very kind, very, very generous when it comes to days off and things like this. Last year, we just straight up closed the last 2 weeks of the year.
Uh-huh.
But it was paid. Like, you know, it wasn't like they're like, okay, see you later, and you're not getting any money. It was basically like, oh, by the way, you get 2 weeks off. But by the end of like the second week, I was like, I need to do something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm pretty sure over the course of the 2 weeks, because part of that was, you know, Christmas and seeing family, but I'm pretty sure I just watched seasons 1 through 4 of The Wire all over again. And that goes a long way. But at some point I'm like, all right, I want to get back to work. So, you know, it worked. How about you, man? You have a good weekend?
I did. I had a great weekend. Of course, went up to Detroit. It's like becoming my third home. So shout out to Detroit, man. Every time I go, I always find more reasons to stay beyond just family.
Speaking of Detroit, what's up? I hate to interrupt your story.
What's up?
Your man Big Sean performed at halftime during Thanksgiving for the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Do you want to guess the two songs he performed?
So first off, before I guess the two songs, was this a Destiny's Child / Ja Rule and Ashanti moment? Did Detroit like boo him out of the building?
Nope, not at all. There were even little kids on the field.
Okay. The You and Me Can Change the World song?
That was the first one.
Okay. Dance?
He played Blessings.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, though. People love that song.
But it's just like he comes out and you're thinking to yourself, all right, these are like nationally televised games. So he starts with One Man Can't Change the World. And I'm like, all right, I don't really like that song, but it's uplifting. He goes into
Blessings. Really not uplifting. It's actually depressing.
Well, you know what I mean. It's meant to be somewhat inspirational, if that's the word I want to use. It's meant to be. But then he goes into Blessings. The juxtaposition between the two just struck me as really kind of funny.
I thought he was going to do like Dance or something.
Well, plus, you know, people all across America had to explain to their grandparents, you know, Way Up, I Feel Blessed.
You can't. You have to explain that.
Well, because the first song, like he comes out and then the first song, nice little pianos and it's not that really, you know, nothing's really going on. And then, you know, all of a sudden everyone's singing Way Up, I Feel Blessed. I thought it was funny.
So what was weird about it? Was it the Way Up, I Feel Blessed part or the fact that it sounds like the Phantom of the Opera?
For me, it was, again, the fact that the first song is like, okay, that's why if you're Big Sean, you make that record so you can go like play that on Ellen and apparently play that at halftime of a Thanksgiving game. But then to go from that very like, you know, somebody get John Legend out of here so he can sing on his pianos.
No,
to ominous synths and drums and.
Yo, if John Legend had like the Undertaker hat and like a cape with the purple gloves, and he had like Paul Bearer standing over him holding the urn up while he's sick. Oh, God. Yeah, that beat is just really creepy for no reason. Why is a song called Blessings creepy? It just sounds like...
Why is a song like called One Man Can't Change the World depressing? Big Sean does not make a lot of sense sometimes.
It really doesn't. It really so word. But yeah, I had a good weekend.
Good.
Just to wrap it up. I had a really good weekend. So, good. But I'm back in the building. I'm ready to work, man. We didn't really take a week off, but I think last week's episode with Tragic Hero, shout out to Tragic. Shout out to everybody who tuned in, who listened, gave us feedback. You guys really enjoyed the interview. It was sort of different from what we normally do on Clock Radio Speakers. It was different, but it was the same, I think. Would you agree with that? Okay, I guess I need to explain that because you're laughing.
That's a rapperism. It's okay, different, but it's the same.
Okay, yeah, right. It's like, you know, it's my fourth out. So,
we're talking about Mad Rapper today. In a weird way.
Are we?
We'll get there.
All right.
I will explain later.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, like, we really just got to sort of nerd out about, you know, the indie grustle with an independent artist who was actually doing it. And it's sort of different from myself. You know, this is my show. So this is a guy coming in there with a completely different experience, different set of rules, different set of, you know, perceptions that he has about it. And I thought it was pretty good. And I think people really like that. I know we have a lot of artists who listen to the show. And, you know, you can pursue music very wide-eyed. And, you know, you're going to take a couple hits in anything that you pursue. But I think Tragic has taken a couple of hits. I think he's learned from them. I think he's adjusted. And he sort of has his view. And I think it was really good for him to, you know, sort of share his perspective on that. So I thought it was a really good show.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I'm really glad we had Tragic on. I think also what we did is we really just really rubbed it in the faces of people who couldn't go to the Happy People show. Pretty much is what happened. Because we're like the whole first part, we're like, so let's talk about the logistics behind this, you know. And I'm sure people who didn't know about the show are just like, what are these two talking about? But I appreciate everybody who listened. I really did.
Yeah, but we didn't review anything.
What do you mean?
Partially because there was nothing to review.
Oh, yeah, in terms of music.
I didn't really talk about anything, yeah.
Well, apparently, as always happens, just when we think there's going to be a lull, just when we think, oh, you know what? Maybe we'll have to stretch. Maybe we'll have to pull out some ideas we've had. We are blessed, in the words of Big Sean. We got some music to talk about today.
We have a lot of music to talk about today.
A lot of music from, I will say, definitely known people. That's not really the word I want to use. Old standbys here on Clock Radio Speakers. We got Jadakiss. We got Rick Ross. We got Kendrick, Fab, Wayne, J. Cole. We got a whole bunch of people to talk about. I'd like to start with Kendrick and your man, Jumanji Cole, if that's all right with you.
I agree with that. Let's go.
So on Black Friday, the two of them released, I guess you'd call them companion songs, companion freestyles, both called Black Friday.
Yeah.
Kendrick's is over. Oh, wait, what's the name of the
Tale of Two Cities.
Thank you. Tale of Two Cities. And then J. Cole's is over. All Right.
Yep.
What made this kind of interesting is, before this, in preparation for what I thought you and I would eventually be getting to, this sort of idea of revisiting albums, I went back and re-listened to J. Cole's 2014 album.
I did as well. Mm. I did on the road trip. I sure did.
And what was your impression of J. Cole's album almost a year later now?
Oh, man. Okay. So I thought we were going to save that for...
Well, okay, we can. So then, well, let me ask you that. Then I'll do this. Did hearing that... make you feel a certain way about Kendrick rapping over this beat?
No.
Okay.
For you? Did it do it for you?
For me, it was more that, so I'll give a, I don't want to give too much away, except to say I am still not particularly impressed with J. Cole's album. So the biggest problem here for me is, that All Right is just so much of a better beat. So mm-hmm. J. Cole immediately has the advantage. It, like, not saying the whole songs, but I'm saying, like, if we're thinking about where they're starting, if we're comparing these side by side, J. Cole gets a heck of an advantage here. Because All Right is just incredibly better. At least to me. I love the beat to All Right. But what did you think? I want to talk about the songs, and we can talk about the concept of them sort of doing this together. Like, what did you think? Did either of them stick out to you?
You know, it was really interesting. So when I listened to it the first time, I sort of did it as I was just watching it unfold on social media. I like the people watch, and there was this great big uproar about Kendrick's. And so I listened to that one first. And I thought it was dope. I thought Kendrick killed it. And I listened to Cole's and I was like, it was okay. But then a few days passed. And I was in my car and I was like, you know, I haven't heard those again. I know we're going to talk about them on the show. Let me play them again.
Okay.
No hype, no gas. Let me hear what they're saying. And I think I'm alone in this when I say J. Cole washed Kendrick on these freestyles.
Washed.
Let me explain. Now, for Kendrick, it's really, really interesting because Kendrick is great. His main strength is storytelling. Do I want to hear Kendrick get on a beat and just rap? I don't know.
I would point out to you and say backseat freestyle.
You know what? Let me finish explaining.
Okay, sorry.
Because I think that sort of brings up that validates my point.
Oh, okay.
So I thought about verses where Kendrick spazzed and I said, yo, Kendrick is rapping. And immediately the first thing that came to mind was the BET Cypher where he dissed Drake. I think that's his best rappity rap verse, or at least my favorite from him. You know, we talked about this on the show. Whatever on the control verse. But records like The Heart, you know, like long freestyles that he's done, he's telling stories. And that's what draws you in. But for me, if you're rappity rapping, if you're getting on a beat and you're just rapping, I need you to engage me with something a little more unique. And I don't think Kendrick does that very well, content-wise. Mm. Now, as far as diction, flow, cadence, he's skating all over A Tale of Two Cities. Everything else is borderline perfect. But if I sit down and listen to the lyrics, or if I go to Rap Genius and read the lyrics, he doesn't really say anything. other than bumping college dropout at the White House or something like that. Like that whole little scheme was cool, but he's not really saying anything. Cole, on the other hand, and I was talking to Taylor, great friend of the show, when we were on the way to Philly, and Taylor made a great point about Cole, and I think that we just haven't given him credit for it. Cole does simple very well. He's not a lyrical, acrobatic type guy, but he gets the credit for being a lyrical, acrobatic type guy, and he's not. But what he is he can take a concept, he can explain it, and he can do it in a way that is engaging. One thing I noticed about Forest Hills Drive is, as sleepy as the production is, when he's telling a story or when he is going on a topic and unpackaging something, lyrically, he is saving that project. And on this, he kind of starts off a little skatey, but about a minute and a half in, he's gone. He hits a stride and he's out of here. And the more I listen to it, the wider the gap gets for me.
So for me, I think it's a couple of things. I agree that J. Cole does really well here in this comparison between the two of them. I think part of it is the beat. I mean, I think beat selection really matters, not just in terms of is it a good beat, but what is the rhythm and sort of the flow of the beat? So where does it allow a rapper's flow to drop in, right?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Does A Tale of Two Cities sound like a TDE beat to you?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I think it totally sounds like a beat that Soundwave or one of the TDE producers would make for Absol. Absolutely.
Maybe.
I think that's why Kendrick picked it.
I just don't particularly like that song. I mean, that beat.
Gotcha. Okay, but go ahead. Finish.
Explaining. Right, but our criticism of J. Cole, especially mine, I would say, is that, and I think you might have even been the one to coin this, but you know, J. Cole the rapper is held back by J. Cole the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it really vividly shows that. I mean, ironically, right? Like Tale of Two Cities, that's a vinyls beat. It's not even a J. Cole beat, but this is a case where we get to hear him completely out of sort of his J. Cole sound.
Mm.
Right? Like there's nothing that sounds like All Right on Forest Hills Drive,
agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
And that, especially, like, I think you point out the same thing. Like once he gets into it, like that second verse, like his flow is like, he just sounds like a different rapper to me.
Yeah.
I think part of it too is, frankly, probably a competitive thing.
Absolutely.
Like if they're planning this and you got Kendrick Lamar on the other side, Cole knew he had to come with it.
Absolutely. And I believe that, because initially I was like, man, Kendrick is going to leave whoever he makes an album with, not just J. Cole, but if he does a joint, if they do a Black Hippie album, if he does a joint project with anybody, he's leaving them in the dust because he's just a completely different artist than his counterparts. But, you know, a friend of mine, we were having this conversation. He made a really good point. He said the camaraderie will show out in their project. And like you just said, I think that Cole around a different group of people than his normal contemporaries who he makes music with.
Yeah.
Will stretch him in a way that will benefit him. And I think that this album could potentially do wonders for J. Cole and finally could do what I personally want, because, I mean, we've been very hard on J. Cole on this podcast, but I want to see J. Cole win. I feel like he has an amazing album in him. Mm. And my hope is that something like this begins sort of clicking, opening up eyes and light bulbs coming on, and he's able to create something that I think is incredible. So rumor has it it's coming out in February.
Well, I mean, he says that at the outro. He says something's coming.
Right.
What it is, we'll see. But yeah, I think I was impressed with J. Cole on this. I thought he sounded, you know, this is what I would rather hear from J. Cole.
Mm-hmm.
I like Kendrick though. I thought Kendrick did. I thought Kendrick was fine on his verse. Again, I don't love him on that beat, but I mean, he's still Kendrick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That man is it.
The only other thing, and you know, I don't want to ruin our future, whatever conversation we have about this. The one thing I will say is that, and I think maybe this goes to your point about how do you think Tale of Two Cities, sounds a little bit like a TDE beat. To me, what I heard on Forest Hills Drive like, it's not quite jazzy, but there's definitely like some jazz influences.
Yeah.
That once you hear that, when, you know, if you hear, if you, you go back and hear it now and you're like, oh, right, the two of them are friends. Like, clearly when Kendrick was making To Pimp a Butterfly, he knew about what J. Cole was doing and vice versa. And the relationship between those two projects and their sound is something I'd never considered before.
Yeah, it was interesting because I even went back and listened to a couple of songs off of Born Sinner. And I completely forgot about Let Nas Down.
Yeah.
And Let Nas, hold on, hold on. Oh, God. The thing about Let Nas Down is I feel like it's a precursor to Pimp a Butterfly. It's very jazzy. It has a little too much hip hop to fit on to Pimp a Butterfly. I think Terrace Martin, and I think they would have added a lot more instrumentation to their, I think, Thundercat, right?
Yeah.
But I sort of hear where J. Cole wants to go, and maybe he doesn't have the resources. So maybe with this album, he's exposed to some producers who can say, who can basically take his beat and Kanye it, you know?
Well, that's interesting. I mean,
or mustard it, better yet, sort of what Kanye did with Sanctified.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I totally forgot about Sanctified.
Yeah, I've been on a Ross kick lately, so I've been listening to Mastermind and Hood Billionaire and God Forgives I Don't, and yeah, we'll talk about that next week though.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about Kendrick and J. Cole?
No, other than I really like and appreciate the idea.
We didn't even talk about the idea. Of sort of these two artists sort of doing this, and that's not a project, it's sort of a joint promotional sort of effort. Apparently the idea was one of J. Cole's guys, but
It was Ibrahim.
Yeah,
really good interview on Rap Radar's podcast. If you haven't heard it,
I'm trying to think of a similar sort of thing like this. I can't really recall anything. You know, typically, unless, I mean, we can go way back, like, you know, Wu-Tang would like coordinate, like when they would like, there was a run of when they would like promote their albums together, but like that's not really even close to the same thing. These guys aren't signed to the same label. There's no like label pushing them or anything like that. It's just, here's an idea we can both sort of, you know, okay, Kendrick releases something, sure. J. Cole releases something, okay, whatever. But when it's this sort of combined thing, did it make you want to, did it make you pay attention more than if it just would have been a random J. Cole song?
Yeah, I think the thing about it was that I always thought that that album was never going to happen because that announcement was like in 2011. Like that was, that idea of them doing an album together came to fruition after Overly Dedicated, around maybe Friday Night Lights time. Because Cole produced High Power for Kendrick. So that's when sort of the idea was brewing. And then they said, hey, when our schedules line up, we'll do it, which is rappers speak for, it's never going to happen.
Right.
So then, you know, when What a Time to Be Alive comes out, Watch the Throne comes out, then I think the fans sort of took this idea and picked it up. And you start seeing fake artwork and people talking, like, especially when What a Time came out, it was like, oh, this is okay. But when J. Cole and Kendrick come out with theirs, and I'm so not looking forward to that conversation. I do not want to compare those two projects because they are completely different. We are really going to compare Drake and Future to J. Cole and Kendrick? Like, it's just two totally different ideas. Speaking of that, on a side note, did you see the interview where Future says, What a Time never happened?
No, I haven't seen that yet. You told me about it, though. And what do you mean by it never happened?
So, if I remember, I think it was Mass Appeal. And they're interviewing Future. And it was like it was a clip at first, but I believe the whole interview was out. And I think they're going through Future's discography with him. And then they get to Dirty Sprite 2 and they say, okay, and then you drop, you know, What a Time to Be Alive. You know, how did that come about or something like that? And Future is kind of looking down. He's distant. He's like, it never happened. And he's like, and the interviewer is kind of looking. He's like, never happened? And he's like, nah, it never happened. And then they go to another question. And he mumbles some rapper stuff and they go to another question. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm skimming through the article now. I don't see that, actually. Am I missing something?
Was it a video? It was a video, I thought.
Cause the
did I get trouble?
The Mass Appeal article seems pretty seems okay.
Did I get trolled? Did I get trolled in these streets?
I mean, in October, Future bought Drake a gigantic ring that says OVO Free Bands on it.
What does that mean?
I mean, this record doesn't.
Listen, man. You know how many things I bought for girls that I have absolutely no connection to right now? Like,
can I say this much though? Actually, sure. I want to say this real quick about Future, because he is on at least one project we're talking about today.
He's on two.
He's really wearing out his sound right now.
Yes, he is.
What is his next move? I mean, obviously he's making a lot of money right now.
Right.
I mean, but he should probably
go on tour.
He go on tour, but we really don't need any new music from him.
Nope. And there's a rumor he's doing the Ape project with Mike Will.
I feel like he'll reach a saturation point. And then once you reach that saturation point, like, you'd rather leave people wanting more. And absolutely. I realize it's very easy for me to say that because I'm asking him to turn down money, basically.
Right.
I just can't.
Well, sometimes you got to turn down 50 to get 100. You know, so if he gets 50 now, in 18 months, he might only get 12. Mm. You know, but if he shuts down for 6 months and he comes back, he might be able to get 75.
The other thing, too, is the only way that he should really keep doing music is if he's going to keep evolving his sound.
Agreed.
Because otherwise, I mean, people will just duplicate it. And then you'll be, and then nobody will need you anymore.
Agreed.
So if you've got the next move ready to go, then sure.
Right.
But very few artists have successfully sort of rolled, you know, have successfully sort of like, okay, here's my sound. And then really without stopping, here's my next sound.
Yeah.
That's very difficult to pull off. Most people need to go away for a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm just frankly, like, I think it's like impossible to really, it's like you're contractually obligated if you're a known but not super famous rapper trying to release an album in the fourth quarter, you better have a Future record on there.
Yeah.
Like Jadakiss.
Oh man.
Where do you want to start? You want to start with these mixtapes? You want to start with Jada?
Let's go Jada, because it's older.
Yeah. Speaking of, this top five Dead or Alive album has been in the works for a while.
Obviously.
Very obviously a while. Like, he started talking about this album in May of 2010.
Yeah.
It's November. Actually, it's December 1st, 2015 right now.
Yep.
This album was released, 2 weeks ago? Like,
Yep, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. That is a long time for an album to really be baking. Can you think of many hip hop albums that have successfully been in the works for that long that came out okay? It just doesn't happen, right? I mean, sounds change, and it is very, like, basically the game I played as I was going through this, I was trying to figure out when was this recorded.
Oh man. Like, bruh.
As you might imagine, I do have track by track notes on this.
Okay.
But we'll go through it quickly.
Because
there's some kind of interesting stuff here.
There is.
First 48, produced by Ty Fife.
Ty Fife. That is a very 90s. Like, right off the bat, we are deep in the trenches in 1999.
Right. The beat is not bad.
I actually like this beat. I think it's cool.
It just sounds nostalgic.
Yeah.
Which works for Jada and what he's going for.
Yep.
It's kind of funny that he's talking about shopping for a place with high ceilings and wood floors. We've come a long way.
We have.
From bathtubs that lift up walls doing 360, and we gonna make it.
Yeah, because it's like, that's pretty standard nowadays.
Right.
It's like, not very difficult to get vaulted ceilings and hardwood floors.
I think he's shopping for like a brownstone in Brooklyn or something. I'm not really sure what's going on.
This is budget like, $700 a month or something like that. It's not.
No.
One bedroom
in
one
New York. In New bed? York.
No. That doesn't. No.
I was gonna
I'm
say.
Not even try to think about
in no. New York. Like 2,000 gets you like a hallway, maybe.
Yeah. So I saw. Now, there is a difference on this album. You said nostalgic.
Yes.
There's a difference. Some of these songs are nostalgic yes. and some of them are dated. And I think this album.
So what do you mean? Like, I think I understand what I'm pretty sure I know what you mean. But what you mean is the difference between we're making this to try to sound familiar, but like old. I can't believe I'm going to call it old school. At this point, it is old school familiar.
God, I know.
God help me. But not sort of, oh, I recorded this 4 years ago and it's been sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, I think, but I don't even think you have to necessarily intentionally create nostalgic music. I think sometimes if it's just in you, that's just what comes out.
I feel like New York is doing a lot of that right now. It's so nostalgic. Like when we talk about that Fab mixtape, there was some ranting.
I think Fab and your man French, they are definitely, I mean, come on, we're throwing trap drums on Renee. Just saying.
I feel like I'm
going to get that on the bingo board.
I feel like somebody could make like a website where you like click the random button and it would randomly find a 90s sample and then throw it over the shot collar drums. And then
that's just harryfraud.com. This is harryfraud.com. And it like, it works every time.
They're going to send the goons after you.
They are. I'm ready. Sun's up, guns up. I'm ready. Two guns up. Everywhere we go, people want to know. This is D-Block, mighty, mighty D-Block. All right, so...
First 48, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I like this. I
am concerned that the second track is a skit. Never a good sign. Also,
first off,
18 tracks.
18 tracks with how many skits? Three skits?
Two, yeah.
Well, two and a half, because one of the skits is a song.
Right.
But yeah, skits worried me a little bit on this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm starting to notice that's coming back. I'm seeing more and more track listings with more songs.
Right.
And it's not just from older artists. I'm seeing 17, 18, 19, 20 records.
Right. I mean, Kairos 2, you know, 20, 23 tracks.
Listen, fam, never, ever again. Though if I do 23 tracks, each song will be a minute and a half. We are in and out real quick. Marcus Graham was 40 minutes, and even that to me was like, in retrospect, might have been a little too long. Try and get that to a good Illmatic pace of like 35 minutes.
You Don't Eat, featuring Puff Daddy, produced by Swizz Beatz and some guy named Avenue Beatz.
Okay. What'd
this is an interesting sample, but this beat just lacks energy, which is the whole point of having Puff featured on a Swizz beat, right? Like, you would sort of want that energy that Swizz can bring when he's on his A game. This is not an A-level beat from Swizz.
You just said when Swizz is on his A game.
That's
this
right.
Is a new, we have gone to a new place in Clock Radio Speakers. Swizz Beatz has an A game.
Yeah, he totally has an A game.
Do we need? He had a really good. Rap Radar interview too. Really, really good. Really, really good. Actually, drop some gems. But anyway, I actually like this song.
Really?
Yeah, I think this record works.
I like. There's another record he does that I like a lot more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to talk about that record when we get to it.
Okay. I wanted more from Puff on this.
Yeah, that felt like similar to what Ross did on Mastermind, where somebody was just recording Puff talking. And it's like, hey, you know, we recorded you on the iPhone ranting the other day.
Right.
Can we use this? You know, so somebody just get, like, listen, just... Somebody get Puff in the studio. I get that we want these rants, but it is a difference between Puff ranting amongst like his contemporaries and Puff in the booth. I want to hear Puff in the booth. I want those ad-libs.
I was actually just going to say, but I'm pretty sure if Puff introduced a service where he calls your engineer over Skype and he's got ad-libs by the minute.
Oh my God. Then every song on Kairos 2 has Puff ad-libs. Puff ad-libs. Manny Fresh ad-libs, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Yes. Timbaland ad-libs.
Birdman ad-libs.
Fat Man Scoop.
Jazzy Faye.
Fizzle, fizzle. Yeah, Jazzy Faye ad-libs as well.
Jermaine Dupri.
Nah, I don't want Jermaine. I don't need
Jermaine. Let's talk about You Can See featuring, of course, Future.
Yep.
Produced by Lee on the Beats.
Okay.
There's a lot going on in this beat. There's so much going on.
Okay.
Future's in the hook because, like I said before, I'm pretty sure it's impossible. Like Def Jam. Is this on Def Jam? I think so.
Yeah, it is.
Pretty sure Def Jam has a clause. Like if you're like a rapper like Jadakiss, like I'd be stunned if the Young OG project didn't have Future on it. Project 2, right? I'm pretty sure they probably have like as a clause, like you need Future on your... He's just everywhere. Future's hook isn't terrible. My problem is that it kind of sounds like French Montana, which is not something that you should be going for if you're Future. And so this is a skippable record. How do you feel about it?
I don't like it.
Yeah, see, you saved a lot of my yapping.
Yeah, it just sounds like, you know, the Future Factory.
Kind of, but this is not a Future kind of beat.
It sounds like this was a Future. This sounds like this would have been on Pluto. Like this sounds
right.
Like,
if you, this is like this, is like 2012, 2013, even.
Yeah. Yeah. We should probably play Guess the Year. If we're going track by track.
Well,
Guess the Year.
We can do it on this next one.
Yes, we can.
Y.O. Youthful Offenders featuring your man Akon.
Akon and Young Jeezy.
Produced by Akon.
Yes.
You know what? This is a total 2009 Dr. Dre ripoff.
Oh, shoot. I was going to say 2005.
Well, I'm being generous. But it's not bad.
You go ahead and you get that.
It's not bad.
You know what? Okay. It's not bad. It's just dated. It just sounds dated.
It is dated, but it's well executed. It's well done. Like, you know, if you put this on Kiss of Death.
Or if Top 5 Dead or Alive would have came out in 2008 when it was supposed to. This would have been a great album 7 years ago. And I don't mean that in a slanderous way. This is like how a lot of people feel about Saigon. Greatest story ever told. Except you, because you're different. But most of us.
I get slandered on my own podcast.
You're like, fair.
You're different.
You're different. Yeah, you're different. Pull up to the scene with your ceiling missing. If the general consensus is, if The Greatest Story Never Told would have come out in 2005 when it was supposed to, that project would have been amazing. I believe that.
Are you discussing a hypothetical world where he gets better Just Blaze beats?
I'm discussing a world where...
Or the same album.
Atlantic clears those samples.
Okay. Right. I mean, sure. Look, I'm not disputing that. There's all sorts of problems. And Saigon is one of those classic, if only something could have... if only, like, what if rappers. But he's not there, so... Frankly, Jadakiss is kind of a what if rapper.
He is.
Because here's what's... I mean, there's a general theme to this review that we're doing, which is basically a lot of this stuff sounds dated. I will give Jadakiss credit, though. He still sounds like Jadakiss.
Absolutely. Now,
even as these tempos change over time, for a dude who really started popping up in mixtapes in 96. Here we are 19 years later.
Yeah.
And he doesn't sound terrible on some slow tempos versus fat. Like, he just sounds like Jadakiss. There's something to be said about that.
Yeah. We're going to get to that.
All right.
Cause I have things to say.
Let's talk about Jason featuring Swiss Beatz.
Yeah.
Produced by Swiss Beatz, and talk about a name that's a blast in the past. Mark Batson.
Wow. Okay.
Who was last heard from in the Dr. Dre Aftermath Hit Factory.
Yep.
Also produced Jay-Z's Lost One.
Okay.
You
mean Dr. Dre didn't do that beat?
Anyway.
I'm shocked.
He did Minority. He helped on Minority Report. He did a lot of that, like, second half of 2000s Dre stuff. He helped out a lot. Unfortunately, that includes stuff like Just Lose It.
Ooh,
yeah.
You can stop right there.
Right. Anyway, he hasn't been heard from in a while.
Okay.
But, you know, time to do. This doesn't really sound like a Dre ripoff beat. This is the best beat on the album so far, unquestionably.
I'll say this. The record by itself, no.
I love Swiss on this.
When it leaked about a month and a half ago, nah. Hearing it within the context of this album, yes. There's also... I'm going to say this, mm-hmm. and it's funny because now I think about it based off of, you know what I'm saying, some other off-air stuff. So there's a remix that Swiss played with KRS-One, and it didn't sound... He threw the South Bronx drums over, or the Bridges Over drums over over the melody, and it worked.
Sure.
It worked.
This is why I love Swiss sometimes, though, because he's basically just doing outlandish-ish talking over... an ominous synth. It's great. Like, he's talking about, you know, he's got his gun and his mask on. It's like, no, you don't. You're collecting art.
Your wife is Alicia Keys. Right. You have like five kids. You're on Instagram all day.
Right. You don't have your gun and your mask on. But it works.
He told a couple good goon stories on that podcast too. Yeah,
I'm sure he's got goon stories.
Yeah, he's engaged in a little goonery in his time.
Goonie goo goo?
Yeah, a little goonie goo goo. On my way to church, Alman Stores this August.
But I like this. Jada's cool on it. I don't really care about the whole, you know, don't shoot or can't breathe. Like, can we dispel the myth that I saw somebody, it wasn't like a serious review, but somebody talking about Jada's sort of social consciousness because they invoked the ridiculously hilarious why. And it's like, okay, look, the Bush knocked down the towers line was pretty dumb in 2004. It's really dumb now. And that plus him saying, I can't breathe as an ad lib on a song where Swiss Beats is talking about having his gun and his mask on does not count. Like he doesn't get to be called socially conscious.
Can I also say that after he says, don't shoot, I can't breathe, he does his laugh. It sort of threw it off for me a little bit. I was willing to give him a pass.
Yeah.
I was going to give him a pass. All right. At least you're saying something.
What do you think is the most awkward use of his laugh? Because I have my, I have always
we'll
one choice.
We'll get to it.
It's not on his album.
It is on the album to me.
To me, it's always on Ghostface's Run.
Oh, yeah. That's your favorite. Yeah.
Because that's.
You take my shirt off. Go in, son.
How old is this record with Lil Wayne, Kill? Produced by Bangladesh. And the fact that it's Wayne in Bangladesh, that alone, this has got to be like 2009, right?
I was going to say 2007. Wait, when did Carter 3 come out? 2008, right?
Eight. Yeah, this is, and then, yeah. But then 6 Foot 7 came out after that, right?
2010?
10, 11, right. So it might be from that era.
I'm going to go with 10. I'm going to go with 9.
9 or 10. Yeah. This beat is no good at all.
It's just dated to me.
Wayne has some energy, which is kind of mildly intriguing. Like, he doesn't sound drugged, but the song is just no good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Man in the Mirror, produced by someone named Pav Bundy, who's doing a mediocre 2011 T-minus impersonation, especially those synths. This song is just fantastically boring.
How is something fantastically boring?
It is like, it's not just, oh, it's boring. Like, it's really trying to be boring. Like, it's...
You said, oh.
There's an aggressive boredom to this song. Yeah, it's no good. What do you think? No?
Not good. I'm good.
Can we talk about Synergy featuring Styles P?
Oh, man.
Produced by Just Blaze.
This song made me cry.
Made me mad.
I cried. I couldn't.
Why didn't they just call it We Gonna Make It 2.0?
You know what? I heard that and I heard somebody else say that, but I didn't hear that until.
Are you kidding me?
I heard it. No. Listen.
Listen.
This is Just Blaze, okay? This is one of my favorite producers ever.
Oh, he's doing his Beatty McBeatmaker 10 on this too.
Oh, God.
Let me throw more strings on top of it.
Yes, but I think those are can't clear the sample strings.
Mm.
Because. If I were to lay that beat out, I would have had the intro. That melody on the intro would have been during the verse, and the strings would have come in on the hook.
When did Return of the Hustle come out?
That was on.
That's like 2009.
Yeah, but remember that was the original version of Dig a Hole. So that beat's from 2006.
To me, that's this era of Just Blaze. Same era.
Yeah. Or. Has Just Blaze not developed from that era? Because that was his, can we say that that was his last great run? Or unless we're going to count? Nah, because 2009, he has some joints. That's when he was doing like radio stations and playing records that would never come out and all that stuff. But either he hasn't evolved much since then, or he's just like taking these old beats that he did 8 or 9 years ago and jazzing them up.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at like his records. Like, I mean, you know, Compton. He did Kendrick featuring Dre.
That record was dope.
Ugh. No Love. Oh, God.
That doesn't count. Nothing he did with Eminem counts. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. Those don't exist.
Hmm. Yeah.
Nope. Of course, again, he put out Lord Knows, which is one of the greatest beats ever. So
is that his last great beat?
I would say so.
Yeah, probably.
I would say so. I know a lot of people, you know, will say that Exhibit C is a better beat than that. See, I know. And I, you know what? That record came on earlier today and I thought about you and I got mad. I'm like, what is, like, listen, Exhibit C is a great song. What is your problem with Exhibit C?
It's a really good song. It's not a great song.
Yeah, you bugging.
Everybody, it's one of those things where people just made it out to be like the greatest thing in the history of music. And it's like, let's just calm down.
You're bugging. It's a great record. It's a great moment. That's one of the first moments, social media moments. Because that record blew up because of the internet. Mm. More specifically, Twitter, now that I think about it. I think Twitter powered that record. So that could be it. But I think aside from all that, I just think it's a great song. So when I heard it this weekend, I just got mad at you. You're lucky I was driving home, buddy. I was sent you some very not so nice text messages.
Back to Synergy. Once you realize that it's basically We Gonna Make It 2.0, you'll never hear it the same way.
This beat makes me sad, man.
Yeah.
The back and forth's not even that good either.
Nah, they're basically trying to do, like, they're doing fan service on here. You know, it's like, hey, it's Jaden Styles going back and forth over Just Blaze.
Right. That on paper sounds amazing. As my middle school basketball coach would say, great idea, bad execution.
This would have, right. If you would have told me that I was getting a song with that lineup in like 2002, I would have been like, hold all my calls.
Well, remember the announcement of Welcome to D-Block?
No.
It was D-Block. It was Jada Styles, Sheik, and Jay Hood over an Eminem beat in 2004.
No, I remember that.
People were thrilled until we got the hook. Sing-songy Eminem. Welcome to D. I'm going to do that on Kairos too. I'm going to sing in a really high pitch and a really low pitch, and I'm going to make you blend them together. And it's going to be amazing.
See, now that I had you watch that Justin Bieber video, now you got all these ideas about what we can do.
Oh my God. We're gonna try some stuff. Oh yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Let's talk about Ain't Nothing New, featuring Neo, Nipsey Hussle, produced by Beat Butcher and Buddha and Grands. How do you feel about this record?
I really want to like this record.
I like this beat.
I think it's very, nah.
The beat or the song?
Just the song as a whole.
Yeah, Nipsey sounds out of place.
And Nipsey's my guy.
Neo, this is just generic. This just reeks of Def Jam had this lying around. But the beat, like, the beat itself, the beat is a perfect match for Jada. But the rest of the song doesn't work at all. Mm. Song had potential, but it didn't work. And that's like a single from this album.
Yeah, it was one of the first leaks.
So High, featuring Wiz.
Hey, guys, it's the weed song.
It's the Wiz pop song. Wiz has this sort of song in his repertoire now. That stupid Fast and the Furious song is a good example of that.
Oof.
I know people like these songs. I have not figured out why.
Listen. If you like that Wiz Khalifa song, at me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up and explain to me why. I feel like that's a myth.
That people like it?
Yes. Who likes that song? It's not like trash. It's so formulaic.
I mean, it's kind of trash.
It's formulaic, and that's what makes it trash.
Mm.
It's like, we've heard this record. Macklemore did this record 2 years ago. Flo Rida did this record 5 years ago. Black Eyed Peas did this record 7 years ago. Like, it's just like, you know, interject the safe rapper over like a piano beat and some Alex the Kid drums. Some really cinematic movie theater drums about like sorrow and loss and triumph. And there you go.
So we don't like this record.
Yeah, no.
All right.
But I do have a single for Kairos 2 in mind.
Do you?
We'll talk off air.
Is it called Zuvi, but it's actually like a really heartfelt track?
And I want you to sample different animals in the background.
Oh, speaking of trademark sort of sound effects, in a complete ripoff of the old Mad Rapper skits, Jadakiss has an interview with his own laugh.
This was the worst use of the Jadakiss laugh. This was, I didn't even know he was, I didn't, you know what? All right, this is just how bad it was. At first I thought it was a Mad Rapper skit until I got halfway through it.
Yeah.
Then when you just said he had an interview with his own skit or with his own laugh, right, his own ad lib, I didn't get that before. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's just how bad it was.
Mm. It's terrible. No. Terrible. Yeah. I mean, we could sit here and slander, but it's just a dumb idea. It's 90 seconds of your life that you
In the immortal words of one Mr. McDowell, stay off the drugs, son.
Critical featuring Jeezy, produced by Rico Beats, who also did that Wiz record. There's just a lot going on this hook.
This might be the worst song on the album.
That's a strong statement.
Now this hook, it just reminds me, I'm surprised like he didn't get one of like the Franchise Boys to do this hook. Like this hook just reeks of...
You think they're available?
You know, they might be on tour. They might be traveling. This hook just screams like 2001. And I heard a term this morning while listening to The Breakfast Club that I realized I hadn't heard it in a while until I heard it. And it was called Down South Hip Hop. Remember that? Remember Down South Hip Hop?
As opposed to Southern Hip Hop?
And now it's just hip hop.
Well,
I don't even think it's West Coast hip hop. I think it's just Cali. I think now we just sort of identify it by states or cities or whatever. Because you got Atlanta, you got New York, you got Cali, you got the Midwest.
Yeah, it used to be that for us snobs up here in the Northeast, anything south of like New Jersey, we just considered Southern hip hop. Now, yes, we recognize that there's a difference between Atlanta. It's really, there's Atlanta, and then there's like country music, country Southern hip hop music, like the Big Crits of the world, the David Banners of the world, whatever's happening in Houston. That's still very far away for us Northeastern elites.
Jeez.
I went up to it.
That's crazy.
This record's not very good, though.
See, it's... give me some more. Okay, I'm good.
Anybody's listening, you could just skip Critical. Like, it's just not very good.
Why is Jadakiss rapping over these down south beats in 2015?
Because if you turn on the radio in New York City, it's what they listen to.
But this is the thing with Jadakiss. Jadakiss has had success on down south beats, you know, features or whatever. I think in 2015... He should have done what Nas did on Life is Good.
Oh, just do a throwback album?
Just do the album that caters to your audience. Like, Jadakiss is never going to cross over.
Right, but I don't think he thinks of himself yet as graduating to the I'm officially a veteran.
But that idea nowadays isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's totally not, right? And Fab is a great example of this. We talk about him often on the show. Somebody who puts out different projects that sound completely different and cater to different people's what they want. There's no reason that Jadakiss couldn't do that. Jadakiss could have made his core fan base happy by rapping over like late 90s beats.
He could have got the Hitman. He could have got Primo. He could have got Buck Wild, you know, some of his 90s, 2000 counterparts production-wise, done a 12, 13-track album, and Jadakiss would like... he'd be an internet darling right now.
You know what, though? I mean, we should give No ID credit for what Nas has done in the later parts of his career, though. Like, to do something like that, you do... I think you... And maybe I'm biased because I'm a producer. I think you need somebody to help you out with that. Because the one guiding principle to this album is that nothing sounds cohesive.
I agree with that.
The only thing that binds these tracks into the concept that this is a project is that they all are on the same CD or the same digital download, if you got that. Or... I mean, that and the fact that the same guy raps on every song. But, like, there's nothing else that connects these. There's there's nothing thematic. There's nothing. There's no sequence. There's no story. There's no consistency. He doesn't have a sound. It is Jadakiss is going to rap. And the idea is basically whatever beats, as long as they sound kind of current, I think he just thinks it'll work. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with that.
But, frankly, that's been Jadakiss's approach the whole time.
Yeah.
Jadakiss has never made a cohesive album. It's always been, you know, whatever's hot. The problem is that none of this stuff is by producers, like with a few except like, you know, there's a handful of records on here that you might take and put on a better project. But like he went out and got a whole bunch of like random, quote unquote, Southern sounding records. A lot of it like, you know, but a lot of this stuff is just old. And even though it's a little older, that doesn't have to be a knock against it. But it's not even particularly good either. You know what I mean? It's clear he, if Def Jam backs up the Brinks truck for him, then maybe he could do something. But, like, there's nothing here.
Yeah, agreed. So does that mean we have to go through the rest of this project?
Can you believe somebody came out with a song in 2015 called Realist in the Game?
And say we should get Young Buck on this.
I would have been really interested in this lineup in 2004.
Absolutely. That's nothing against Young Buck. It's just reeks of 2004.
With this beat and this hook, this is 2012 Rick Ross.
You giving it that far out? I think this would have been dated in 2012. I think this is 2007.
How do you feel about the Nas record?
I like this record. I feel like there's something missing from the beat.
The sample is not 100% there. The drums are nice.
Yeah, I feel like something's missing from the beat. Like, it needs to be a little bit bigger. Mm. But I still like this record.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
And Nas does his thing on it. Yeah. I like it. Nas and Jay, they got a couple records.
Yeah.
This, Show Discipline, Made You Look Remix. Is that it?
No,
it's a few.
Yeah,
it's not a
couple.
It's a few. But yeah, I like this record. This record is cool.
So are there like maybe three good songs on this album?
Yeah, I'll take Rain.
I'll take Jason.
I'll take Jason. I'll take You Don't Eat, and I'll take the intro.
All right. That's four.
Yep. Four records.
Halfway to a EP.
See, and this is the thing that when I sort of debate with people and they start naming records on like a 20-track album, and they name five records. And then, you know, so that's like saying, well, if Curry shoots 5 for 20, does he have a good night? No.
You know what, though? I will give a slight rebuttal to that, which is that some albums, if those five records are five of the first six, then it feels like part of this album I can just listen to and it might be great. And it might be memorable because of that. Whereas if you have to hunt around for the five good ones, that actually feels different.
You know, I was thinking about that this morning because, again, we're referencing this Rap Radar podcast. They interview Pusha T and they brought up Lord Willing, and Elliot Wilson and B-Dot both said that was the Clip's best album. And hold on.
I'm saying nothing.
And Pusha like blew a gasket and was like, no way, that's our best album. Our best album is Hell Have No Fury. And I started thinking about the records on Lord Willing. And I think that the records on Lord Willing are more notable. You've got Grindin'. You've got
When the Last Time.
When the Last Time. And he said he'll never perform When's the Last Time. He hates that record.
The beat is not aged 100% well.
It is not aged well.
Like, if you hear it and if you don't have the benefit of nostalgia. I used to think that record was amazing.
That record was, listen, that was pristine Armand in the Club time. Like, right. You couldn't tell me nothing when that record was out.
Right. Whereas if you hear it with fresh ears in 2015, I suspect it might sound like a bird landed on a keyboard.
So you've got Virginia, you've got Hot Damn, you got Ma Don't Love Her, you got even Comedy Central, I'm Not You. So these are like,
by the way, Young Boy.
Young Boy's dope, but I don't hear a lot. I didn't mention Young Boy because a lot of people don't say Young Boy. When you talk about that record.
It's probably like the third or fourth best song on that album.
Now, those are more notable records to me. Mm. But when you talk about Hell Have No Fury, there's a consistency in all those songs where the best songs on the album are great, but the good songs are really good. Mm. There's more highs and lows with Lord Willing versus Hell Have No Fury. The levels are pretty high other than, I think the only whack record on Hell Have No Fury is what? Trill? And Ancha's then?
Whoa. Trill is amazing.
No, Trill is terrible.
Ancha, Wamp Wamp What It Do hasn't aged that well.
Wamp Wamp. Oh, Slim Thug. We hardly knew you.
But Trill is amazing.
No, Trill is terrible.
What?
Trill is terrible.
Hold on. What?
Sounds like somebody trying to build a computer.
Something I was doing in 2006. I mean, that's
right.
Right.
So that was just the soundtrack to your life, and that's why.
Oh, stop it! Trill is great.
You got Mom, I'm So Sorry, Mr. Me Too, right around. Oh my God!
Listen, Mr. Me Too really, really holds up still as a single.
It does.
Right Around Shining, and Hello New World, and Keys Open Doors.
Keys Open Doors. I got to rhyme over at least two of those before I stop rapping.
Yeah.
I gotta rap over Ride Around Shining pretty soon.
Yeah, that when Ride Around Shining comes in, you're just like, oh, okay, we're going somewhere.
Yeah. So I think that's what it is. So I use the example with the clips with a lot of people's albums where people will say a certain album is better, but they'll say it's better because the song, the highs and lows are more distinct. So the highs are like they really bring out something as opposed to a great album, a great body of work. The low isn't low at all. It's just the highs peak a little bit higher than the consistency of the rest of the album.
Right. And I think that that's a conversation that extends to all sort of things, all sorts of walks of life where people compare things, right? Is it about the peaks or is it about the consistency?
Right.
Right. We talk about it in sports. We talk about it in music. Now I want to go back and listen to Hell Hath No Fury. Thanks.
I do too. Oh, God. I just got Comedy Central stuck in my head. What was the record that the Clips did with... Oh, I'm serious. Yeah, have we done a Clips retro? We have, right?
We did a Neptunes retro.
Okay, so we talked. I was gonna say, so with this Pusha T album coming out pretty soon.
Well, we're getting a mixtape, or is it an album?
It's a pre album. So it's basically two albums.
Pre-album.
So hold on.
This is the new world.
I mean, to me, I've said this before on the show. I don't care.
Like,
yeah, it's a project. Like he said, his album's coming out next year, but this is an album, and he said these aren't leftovers either. And he was sort of naming the producers and the con. I was like, yeah, these don't sound, just from his description of it, these don't sound like leftovers. It just sounds like he may have possibly come up with 22, 24 great records and just wanted to spread them out. I'm not mad at it. But he said it's going to be retail.
Well, sure. The lesson of 2015 is you don't give your music away.
Yeah. Yeah, put it on Apple Music.
At the very least, make it streamable.
Yeah, yep. Right. Yeah, Apple Music got to open up them gates. Oh, another thing with Apple Music, I'm sold.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got rid of my Google Play.
Wow. What did it for you?
The playlists.
They're pretty serious.
Yeah, just going into, and I think they do this better than Spotify, going into an artist, say I type up Drake, and... there's deep cuts in Drake's influences, people who've been influenced by Drake. Like, I like stuff like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
I think that's dope. I don't think Spotify does that as well. But I do. The one thing that Spotify does have on Apple Music is their radio. And by that, I mean, if I'm listening to Ride Around Shining, I can just go to Start Radio. And I think that they do that better than Apple Music.
Mm.
So I'm just gonna keep both. Money ain't a thing. Got paper.
All right. We talked Clips. We talked Jada Kiss. We talked Kendrick and Cole. Anything else you want to talk about for this side?
Nah, I think we're good because I'm really ready to get into the second side. I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.